A Falcon Flies, the Ballantine Series, Book 1, written by Wilbur Smith and read by Elliot Chapman.
1860. Africa crouched low on the horizon, like a lion in ambush, tawny and gold in the early sunlight, seared by the cold of the Benguela. Robin Ballantyne stood by the ship's rail and stared towards it. She had been standing like that since an hour before dawn, long before the land could be seen. She had known it was there, sensed its vast, enigmatic presence in the darkness, detected its breath, warmth, and spicy dry over the clammy, cold exhalations of the current on which the great ship rode. It was her cry, not that of the masthead, which brought Captain Mungo St. John charging up the companionway from his stern quarters, and the rest of the ship's company crowding to the ship's side to stare and jabber. For seconds only, Mungo St. John gripped the teak rail, staring at the land before whirling to call his orders in the low but piercing tone which seemed to carry to every corner of the ship. "Stand by to go about!" Tipu, the mate, scattered the crew to their duties with knotted rope end and clubbed fists. For 2 weeks, furious winds and low, sullen skies had denied them a glimpse of sun or moon, or of any other heavenly body on which to establish a position. On dead reckoning, the tall clipper should have been 100 nautical miles further west, well clear of this treacherous coast with its uncharted hazards and wild, deserted shores. The captain was freshly awakened, the thick, dark mane of his hair tangled, rippling now in the wind, his cheeks lightly flushed with sleep, and also with anger and alarm beneath the smooth, darkly tanned skin. Yet his eyes were clear, the whites contrasting starkly against the golden-flecked yellow of the iris. Once again, even in this moment of distraction and confusion, Robin wondered at the sheer physical presence of the man, a dangerous, disturbing quality that at the same time both repelled and attracted her intensely. His white linen shirt had been stuffed hastily into his breeches, and the front was unfastened. The skin of his chest was dark and smooth also, as if it had been oiled, and the hair upon it was crisp and black, tight whorls of it that made her blush, reminding her too clearly of that morning early in the voyage, the first morning that they had run into the warm, blue waters of the Atlantic Ocean below latitude 35 degrees north, the morning which for her had been the subject of much torment and troubled prayer since. That morning she had heard the splash and drum of water on the deck above her, and the clank of the ship's pump. She had left the makeshift desk in her tiny cabin on which she was working at her journal, slipped a shawl over her shoulders, and gone up onto the main deck, stepping unsuspectingly into the bright white sunlight, and then stopping aghast. There were two seamen working the pump lustily, and the clear seawater hissed from its throat in a solid jet. Naked, Mungo St. John stood beneath it, lifting his face and his arms towards it, the water sleeking his black hair down over his face and neck, flattening his body hair over his chest and the muscled plane of his belly. She had stood and stared, completely frozen, unable to tear her eyes away. The two seamen had turned their heads and grinned lewdly at her while they kept the handles pumping the hissing water. Of course she had seen a man's naked body before, laid out on the dissection table, soft white flesh collapsing over bone, and with belly pouch slit open, and the internal organs spilling out of it like butcher's offal, or between the grubby blankets of the fever hospital, sweating and stinking and racked with the convulsions of unrushing death. But never like this. Not healthy and vital and overwhelming like this. This was a marvellous symmetry and balance of trunk to long, powerful legs, of broad shoulders to narrow waist. There was a lustre to the skin, even where the sun had not gilded it. This was not an untidy tangle of masculine organs half hidden by a bush of coarse hair, shameful and vaguely revolting. This was vibrant manhood, and she had been struck with sudden insight as to the original sin of Eve, the serpent and the apples, here offered again, and she had gasped aloud.